How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We got so much stuff to talk about here today. I want to apologize in advance. I bit my tongue. What a way to start off the show today. I bit my tongue, so I'm a little marble mouth today. So if I stumble over some words, I am not inebriated. I am not in no condition to perform, as wrestlers often are. But I shouldn't say often are. But anyway, we got a lot of stuff to talk about here today. Both in wrestling and mixed martial arts, we've got UFC 136 last night to talk about. Not only some great fights, but quite the promo by Chael Sonnen. I think perhaps the first ever challenge for a loser leaves town match in UFC history. There have, in fact, been unofficial loser leaves town matches. For example, when two guys are going to the ring and they both have 3 losses on their record, 3 straight losses, usually the guy who loses is going to be cut from the company. So it's an unofficial loser leaves town match. This is official. Chael Sonnen has challenged Anderson Silva over Super Bowl weekend. Stipulations being that if Anderson Silva loses, he needs to leave the division, meaning presumably move up to 205. And if Chael Sonnen loses, he has vowed to leave the UFC. We're going to talk about that more, plus all of the results of UFC 136. 2 title matches on the show. Were there any title changes? How did the challengers do? Who might be next in line for titles? We'll talk about that. On the wrestling side, obviously the big story is Raw last week. Everybody walked out on Triple H. Everybody voted no confidence in the COO of WWE. They walked off Raw. And this past Friday on SmackDown, you saw the epic follow-up, that being that everybody came back to work. What the hell does this have to do with anything? What are they going to do on Raw? Why does the storyline make no sense? Is there any way to make this storyline make sense? What does this have to do with Vengeance or Hell in the Cell? Well, we'll talk about that later on this program. A lot of stuff coming up. It's going to be a fun 2 hours, so check it out. Back after this, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, who hopefully has not bitten his tongue. We only need one marble mouth on the show here today. So much stuff to talk about. We're not going to waste any time. Last night, UFC 136, we had 2 title matches on the show. We had a challenge for a loser leaves town match. It was a pretty darn good show overall. And Mike, how did you like it?
That was a great show. I mean, I didn't see the entire undercard, but from what I saw from top to bottom, it was a really, really great show. Now, this is probably going to do on the low end of the pay-per-view buy scale, probably whatever the bare minimum is now. What's the baseline? About 300,000? That's probably what this is going to do. I think the last one with Jones and Rampage, they were talking like 4 or 450 for it. So if that's the case, this probably got just the hardcore fan base. But with that said, they gave them their money's worth out of it. Obviously, the main event was great. Namfan and Leonard Garcia got fight of the night again. Joe Lozon, I mean, there were, you know, great knockout by Frankie Edgar, great submission by Joe Lozon. So you got a little bit of everything on this show. And Frankie Edgar, Dana White said in the post-fight press conference, people won't agree with him when he says this, but you can make a case for Edgar almost to be the second best pound for pound fighter in the world. He's got him placed behind Anderson Silva. Now, I don't think he's better than George St. Pierre, but with that said, he's really, really good and really dominant. And he and Jose Aldo both defended their titles in a dominant fashion against, you know, great competition. And it really surprised me in the main event how small Gray Maynard fought. Especially with someone with the skills of Frankie Edgar, and you know he can take a punch. He was knocked down 3 times in the first round in their last fight. Obviously, Maynard, even though it almost seems like a different era ago, beat him in their first fight. But Edgar's boxing is fantastic, and even though Maynard got the advantage in the first round and really dominated, it was a 10-8 round, and really put the wood to Frankie with these right uppercuts that he was throwing and mixing in kicks with it. He never varied from that. He let Edgar get the pace back. he fought small. He fought into Frankie Edgar's zone, and Frankie just kind of dove in and out and did what he does, and that's, you know, really land some good hard one-off shots, and then, you know, when he dives back in, land some combinations, and it just, he dragged Maynard down, you know, psychologically during the bout, where just, you know, much like Aldo did in the semi-main event with Flory, and they just ground these guys, you know, into basically into submission, and Frankie landing, you know, going for a takedown with what ended the fight in the fourth round, going for a takedown, not getting it, popping back up with a right uppercut, which really knocked Maynard back, and then finished it up. It was a very impressive performance for both Aldo and Frankie, but especially Frankie.
You know, Gray Maynard in that first fight in January, or the second fight, I guess, the first of the modern era, the first Gray Maynard-Frankie Edgar fight, went to a draw. And it was the exact same first round both times. And I was watching last night, and I thought, this looks exactly the same. And not just the fact that he almost finished him in the first round, but I actually went back to my report on the January fight. And sure enough, I wrote the exact same thing in January that I was thinking last night, which was that Gray Maynard is destroying this guy in the first round, and there's like a minute and a half left. Go! Finish the guy! And instead, he had him on the ropes, he had him wobbly-legged, and he was all cautious, and he sat back, and he gave the guy a chance to recover. He did this in January, and he ended up going to a draw as a result of this. And here we are. I mean, supposedly, this had been gnawing at him for 8 months. This had been driving him nuts. This the fact that he hadn't won that fight. He just had to go in there on this evening and redeem himself and get this win. And he goes in there. He has the exact same first round. And when he had the chance, when he had the guy rocked, what did he do again? Nothing. And in fact, at the end of the fight, in Frankie's post-fight interview, Frankie goes out there and he said, I had him rocked. In fact, I've actually got the exact quote here because it's the whole thing. I seen him rocked, Frankie said, and I went for the kill. And that's why one guy is the champion and the other guy hung his head afterwards and is just completely devastated. Because Frankie Edgar had the guy rocked and he went for the kill. Gray Maynard had the guy rocked, and he sat back. And in the second round, which is kind of what Florian did, some people would argue, he laid back. You know, I'm going to rest. I'm going to get my strength back. And then later in the fight, I'm going to finish this guy. You don't do that with the champion. Maybe you can do that with some geek, but you don't go in there and do that with the champion, especially since you saw what happened in January. You don't lay back and let Frankie Edgar have a chance to recover. And that's what Gray Maynard did, and he lost the fight. And this time, wasn't even a decision. I thought it'd go to a decision. He lost decisively. He got knocked out because, as Frankie said, I seen him rocked, and I went for the kill. That's a champion right there.
And I think that's more, you know, that's more the case of in the Maynard fight than is the Florian fight. I think more what it was with the Florian fight is Jose Aldo hurts a lot. And it just, you know, he kind of caught up with Florian's body where, you know, he did. I don't think he was really resting up that much. I think he was just, he was getting hurt and more broken down as the fight went on. And it's, you know, with Florian, it's, I, you know, was at the fight with him and BJ Penn, and he's gotten his chances. He is a great top contender. He's one of those guys that can linger around forever because he is good enough to beat most guys. He just cannot punch through. And again, not like he's, you know, had the easiest of competition too, although it is scary. But yeah, Maynard, in Maynard's case, he definitely should have went for it. And because he knows, yes, you know, Frankie's got gas. You are winning that first round decisively, 10-8 style. You don't want to do anything stupid or anything like that, but you've, that's what the best fighters do, as you said. You have to know when to go for the kill, at least take the chance to go for the kill, and Maynard didn't do it. And then, you know, and again, even if he wanted to slow up in that second round, you didn't have to fight so small. And you didn't, when you knew it wasn't working, he didn't vary from that. And then he ends up getting rocked and standing in there and getting rocked by a guy who is a better boxer.
As far as the Florian fight, it was kind of almost, it was similar. It was a similar fight in the sense that Florian went in there and just bullied the guy. I mean, he bullied the guy in the first round, bullying him up against the fence and trying to take him down, and Aldo's got good takedown defense, but You know, Aldo, he was dragged out of the scale. He has to cut a lot of weight. I mean, there was a picture last night of him standing next to Edgar. And if you showed this to your normal person and said, all right, which guy is the 155-pound champion and which guy is a 145-pound champion? And they would all say, oh, well, you know, Aldo's a heavier guy because he's a bigger, heavier guy. But no, Edgar's 155 and Aldo is 145. And Aldo went in there. And when you do a tough weight cut like that, I mean, you know, you can get tired. And in the first round, Florian went in there and he kept trying to take him down. And, you know, it wasn't always working, but Aldo was getting tired and Florian won that round. And I thought, wow, that's a great round for Kenny there. And then comes out for the second round and a completely different fight. A completely different fight. And it was all downhill from there. And granted, you know, Florian got tired later on as well. But, you know, he had a winning strategy. And then he went in there and abandoned that strategy. And again, that's why Aldo is the champion and Kenny Florian is not.
That's what made me laugh, too, about in the post-fight press conference, whoever asked, you know, well, what if Frankie goes down to 145 and can he fight with both titles? Can he choose? And they're asking Dana White this, and it's like, why wouldn't Aldo go up? I mean, he had to get buck naked, you know, and I think this is the second time he's had to do this to make weight down at that weight, and, you know, he would be really damn good at 155, too. Why would Frankie go down? He's the one who doesn't have to cut or do any damage to his body to stay at that weight. Aldo's the one who should be going up, which, you know, that may be the only way, as we've talked about with the dominant champions that are in the UFC, that may be the only way that 145 belt ever becomes open in the foreseeable future, because Aldo is dangerous.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Edgar, not just because he does these remarkable comebacks, but because he's the only champion in UFC that is fighting at his natural weight. Everybody else cuts weight. Everybody else is trying to cut as much weight as possible so they can rehydrate and go in there heavy. Which, to me, you know, if you're a great fighter, if you're the champion, you should be able to fight and win at your natural weight. And the only one doing that is Edgar. And he has here's the thing. He has a reason for it. He thinks if he doesn't cut weight, it's going to keep him from getting tired and help his stamina. So it's kind of preposterous that people are asking him to cut weight to go to 145. We'll talk about this more after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We were talking UFC 136 last night. A very fun show. I was putting over Frankie Edgar as a real man, a tough man who goes in there and fights at his own weight. Not only fights at his natural weight without cutting, but he's a champion, a tough dude. And strangely enough, as I mentioned before the break, he does this because he feels that not having to weight cut helps his cardio and his stamina. And, you know, Dana White, of all people, was a person who was asking him to move up in weight, which is kind of funny. And one more thing very quickly, and you can talk about this as well, Mike. Frankie Edgar does not cut weight. And in the last two fights, we have seen him badly rocked in the first round. And he staged a remarkable comeback and gone on to, in the first fight, fight to a draw and retain his title. And then last night, he won. He got the knockout in the fourth round. Now, one of the things about weight cutting, I hate weight cutting. I know that it's what is done, but I just hate it. I mean, you know, people always talk about, oh, it has to be done, oh, this, oh, that. But I did a jiu-jitsu tournament a couple of months ago, and everybody weighed in right before they stepped on the mat. And there were no problems with people missing weight. Because when the rules are, you weigh in right before you step on the mat, people don't cut weight and go nuts. Because they can't. Because you're weighing in right before you get on the mat. And realistically, these guys in UFC are professionals. And if you told everybody you're weighing in before you step onto the mat, you wouldn't have people doing this. And you wouldn't have people missing weight. I don't think you'd have more people missing weight that are missing weight now. And if they do, they're done. See ya. You know, you think George St. Pierre is going to miss weight if he has to do same-day weigh-ins or right before he steps into the octagon weigh-ins? Of course not. He's going to be right on weight. But anyway, the point is, when you cut weight, All right. You're not only stressing your kidneys and just stressing out your body in general. There have been a lot of guys who they cut weight throughout their amateur career, and then the day comes where they can't cut weight anymore. Their body shuts down. It's not good. So you not only deal with that issue, but when you cut weight and you're badly dehydrated, and like Jose Aldo, you get dragged onto the scale, basically, and you can't wait to get off and start rehydrating. You know, you can do a lot of rehydration in 24 hours, but you're not going to fully rehydrate your body. And, you know, when you dehydrate in such a manner, a lot of the fluid around your brain, you know, you lose some of that fluid as well. You are more susceptible to knockouts when you do this serious weight cutting. And it may be a case where had Frankie Edgar, let's say that Frankie Edgar walks around at 172 and he cut a ton of weight to make 155. You know, there's a chance that when he went in there in both those fights that he would have been knocked out. I mean, out in those first two rounds because of the fact that he got rocked after dehydrating himself. So the fact that he didn't may be one of the reasons why he took all those shots in the first round of both fights and managed to recover and make a comeback.
Yeah, but I'll play devil's advocate to that and say, and there's also the chance that he comes in like Arturo Gatti against Joey Gamache or Manny Pacquiao, Oscar De La Hoya cut weight, so it would be the opposite effect. But, you know, there's fights like with Gatti Gamache and where you do that, you cut the weight and you come in and you put it back on and you rehydrate and then you basically almost kill who you're fighting. Anthony Rumble Johnson, I mean, he got a knockout of the night when he missed weight and he's massive. He is massive for his division. And, you know, he has cut and went back in very heavy and, you know, looking like he's going to kill guys. So it does work in the opposite effect. What will also come up, if you decide to say, okay, everybody's got to commit their natural weight, you're opening it up for more weight divisions. And because you go, well, there are huge, you know, 185-pound guys and very small ones, and, you know, some guys who fit in the middle, and you're going to start getting into possibly that, too, of lobbying for new divisions. And even if that is the case, it doesn't matter. People are still going to cut weight or figure out ways to use diuretics beforehand. Amateur wrestling, you know, MMA, boxing, it happens in all of them. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's healthy because it's not. It's why they're trying so hard in high schools when it comes to good amateur wrestlers that they are fighting at their weight because, you're doing this on a body that's still growing, too, and it's not good. I think it's nice in theory. It's nice in theory if everyone would go in and do that, but it still comes down to getting an advantage. And because of that, it's going to take place. I mean, again, with all we look at with headshots and things like that, I mean, that's one thing, too, that, you know, it may become an issue, but these guys are professionals doing this with their body, and as long as it's in place. Now, what they could come up with is a percentage or a certain amount of weight that they can't cut or a certain level of percentage of weight that you could put on after the weigh-ins and things like that. I mean, you'd probably be better off trying to do something like that than just trying to say, okay, nobody's cutting weight anymore.
Yeah, but since you're playing devil's advocate, yes, if everyone went natural weight, there would be some guys that would be big 185-pounders and some guys that would be small 185-pounders. It's like that now. It is.
Well,
it's
right.
The same thing, except people wouldn't be cutting unhealthy weight to be a large or small 185 pounder.
You know, but they would. I bet you they would. Now, they, you know, obviously some guys would have to change diets and things like that. And you know, if you are a larger 205 pound guy who may be teetering over the edge and may have to end up in the heavyweight division, I mean, you may want to increase, you know, vegetarianism or something where you try to be leaner and things like that. But, you know, still the use of diuretics and things like that, I think before the fight would increase. And again, I just, it sounds awful to say, but no matter what you come up with to try to make it healthier, there's somebody who's going to do something unhealthy to their body that will turn around and create a new wrench in the plans. And again, I'm not saying that's right or anything like that. I just think it's almost impossible to try to just say, hey, come in at your natural way. I just don't think that's, I bet you there'll be big pushback for that.
Well, of course there will. But I'm telling you that if those are the rules, it will be fine. I'm just telling you that. I mean, whenever people say, "Oh, it's not going to, it's going to be fine." I mean, just trust me. I mean, there's a lot of money on the line. There is a lot of money on the line. And I firmly believe, and listen, you can argue, anybody can argue with me if they want, but guess what? You don't know because they're not doing it. But I can tell you that, if you are telling me that this won't work, find a sport where the guys are told to come in at their natural weight and show me a sport where they're doing that and it's an abject failure. And you won't. Because if it were an abject failure, they wouldn't be doing that. You know, it's obviously working. If these are the rules, people will abide by them. That's just the way that it is, especially professionals. You know, if there were a TNA of MMA, you know, maybe the old Elite XC or something like that, then yes, I'm sure something would happen. It would be a complete disaster. But in UFC, at the upper level with a bunch of professionals, the fools would be weeded out rather quickly and everybody else would be making weight without question. It's not like people don't miss weight now. Of course they do. You know, you'd have you'd have the exact same percentage of people missing weight regardless of what the rules are, because people are going to abide by the rules when they're professionals, or they don't make it to that level. They're not professionals. That's just the way that it is.
Or do you think a majority of fighters would go for that? Forget about the UFC even just decreeing it. Do you think, honestly, that a majority of fighters or majority of camps would actually go for that?
Well, yeah, if that's the option, if there are no other options, then yes. I mean, listen, there's a million things.
I'm not saying that they would not do it if it was decreed, but I think they would lobby so hard against it that it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, but there's no union.
Because
what lobbying?
Because here's another thing. You're also babysitting. These are professionals that are doing this with their bodies, too. I mean, it's like, you know, these guys, like you said, they are professionals. They know what they're doing with their body. They have trainers now. They have better doctors. They have these, you know, it's better than it's ever been. If that's what they want to do to their body to try to cut down to that weight, that's fine.
But why don't you just say, okay, well, everyone go ahead and use drugs then? They know what they're doing with their bodies. They've got doctors.
No, that's not even the same thing, Brian. It's not even the same thing. These guys are cutting weight. In the NFL, they do this. I mean, I'm not saying it's right for the amount that some people cut, but nobody, you know, who has died from this in MMA yet? Who has been hospitalized outside of getting IVs? Who has been hospitalized and dropped out in the middle of the ring and had to be dragged out? You know, it hasn't happened yet.
So,
and you're not, what are you going to do, babysit the future? Well, it could happen. Well, you know what? This happens, you know, more in amateur wrestling. I hear about it more in high schools and stuff like that. You don't even hear about it much on a college level. You'd have to, I mean, I don't know. I just think, again, and the onus is on the other guy who's fighting, too. If his team came in and said, wait, you know, if more people lobbied afterwards in cases like Gotti and Gamache and Rumble Johnson fights and things like that, where they're saying, hey, this guy's putting on way too much weight. He's out of my weight division now. We're not fighting. I think that would be a more effective way to try to get something passed. But again, I think everybody's got someone in their camp that is probably cutting weight and more effective at a smaller weight division. So I don't, again, it's a little bit of babysitting here too, where it's like, I don't think it's quite necessary.
Okay, hold on though. When you talk about lobbying, what kind of lobbying? There's no union. And if you look back at the last couple of years, UFC has done a million things that the fighters have cried and complained about. But guess what? That's the way it is. Think about, and I don't even necessarily agree with a lot of these things. You know, for example, let's say that you're a fighter who makes no money and you've got all these sponsors that are paying you, you know, and this is helping you survive. And UFC comes in and says, all right, no sponsors. You are not allowed to have any sponsors unless your sponsor pays $100,000 to UFC first. And then at that point, they can be an official sponsor, and then they can put their stuff on your shorts. Okay? Where was all the lobbying? Okay, that happened. All right? Things like this happen all the time, and people complain, but guess what? Those are the rules. And so as much as people complain about it, guess what? That's just the way it is now. And it'd be
the
same thing with anything else. I'm not saying
this all the time, and again, I don't know where the interest is for the UFC to actually do this, too.
Well, I may just be me. I don't know. That's just my opinion. Hold on. Let's go to a break. We'll talk about this more when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. For the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We have daily news updates. We have TV reviews, all of the major MMA and pro wrestling shows. We have weekly newsletters. And I'm not just talking about the little newsletter that you get from your church group. 35,000 words of news and information on pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every week in the Wrestling Observer newsletter. 15,000 additional words in Figure Four weekly. Dave has been publishing the Observer, Dave Meltzer, since 1983. I have been publishing since 1995. We've also got hundreds of back issues up on the website. New issues being added every week. Dave just put up an issue from 1994, the result of the famous 1994 Vince McMahon steroid trial. If you ever wanted to know what happened there, all the information is, in fact, in that newsletter in great, great detail. He followed it week to week. Plus, radio shows. If you love this show, despite the passionate arguments about weight cutting, if you love this show and you only get to hear it one time per week, well, you're missing out. We do shows virtually every single day at WrestlingObserver.com. 15 to 20 brand new radio shows every single week. All up at WrestlingObserver.com for members. It's $10.99 per month. That's it. There are no additional fees. Not only to get every brand new show, but every show we have ever done in the history of the website dating back to June of 2005 is available for subscribers. We don't restrict the archive to the last year or the last 3 years. Every show we've ever done is available. So basically, for $10.99, you get our life's work over the past 7 years. So head up there. We have interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Just a couple of weeks ago, Big John McCarthy was on the show. Bruno Sammartino, who was just turned 76 years old, has been on the show several times. We've had Bret Hart, Ric Flair. List goes on and on. You can go up and check the archives right now and see all of these big names we've talked to. But all available for you right now, WrestlingObserver.com. You can download them to your iPod, iPad, iPhone, whatever your listening device may be. And they can be downloaded automatically from iTunes as well. Wake up in the morning, brand new shows for your commute, for work, for the gym, wherever you go. WrestlingObserver.com. Sign up. I've said it a million times. If you like this show, I guarantee you will love a subscription. And if you don't, email me, Brian@WrestlingObserver.com. We'll make it right. And I don't worry about that too much because people love it. Anyway, we are arguing passionately about weight cutting. And I don't even know where we were at, except that I remember being right.
And that's where you were wrong.
How dare you? How dare you?
And again, it probably is just, and I'm not saying that it wouldn't, you're not fighting the good fight. You're not fighting the healthiest fight. You're not fighting the most noble fight, because actually you are. It just, I cannot see it happening, because, again, until something happens, I know that's terrible to say, but until something that bad happens, I can't see him changing it, because from the UFC's point of view, it gives them more options and Joe Silva more options on creating fights. I think when it comes to the camps, you know, they have guys in that camp that they are, you know, they might have a couple guys who could be title contenders at one weight, but just maybe in the mix at another weight. And even if it happens, I just cannot see it happening again. Not that it wouldn't make sense to do that, not that it wouldn't be healthy. I just can't see the interest in it from anybody until something that bad happens, and that hasn't even come close to happening yet.
Well, maybe I should just put out a final impassioned plea to the fighters and just say that with the exception of Frankie Edgar and the heavyweights, you're all cowards because you won't fight a guy your own size. You've got to cut weight, so you go in there bigger than your opponent. That's a coward. That's a bully. Fight men your own size, everybody, like Frankie Edgar and Cain Velasquez. I can't say Brock Lesnar, though, but at least Brock Lesnar, you know, he's too big for any division. He doesn't have an opportunity to fight above 265, so he has to cut to 265. But the rest of you don't have any excuse, Anthony Rumble Johnson. All right.
You know, Zulu Zinho has been fighting at his natural weight for years.
That's true.
And, you know, this could actually, it would be a benefit because I think there would be a lobby to, if for no other reason, because for the most part the titles are close, although I'm sure you'd probably see a title between 155 and 170. I think you definitely would see one between 205 and heavyweight being 265. I could see a 225-pound belt, which I think, unlike the cruiserweight title, when it came to boxing, wouldn't just be a forgotten about garbage belt for guys working their way up to heavyweight or trying to drop cut weight and drop back down again, although that's quite rare when it comes to boxing. But I think a 225-pound belt would actually be pretty cool, although we'd still have to, as long as the evolution of fighters getting bigger continues to happen, I think it could work out. I think the only drawback to having an idea like that would be just running out of guys who over 225 who, you know, fit between 225 and 265.
Chael Sonnen destroyed Brian Stann last night.
How long? I cannot believe it took almost the entire first half of the first hour here to actually get to Chael Sonnen, who this show is all about wrestling and mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
What is wrestling and mixed martial arts?
What's funny is those of you that watched the show last night and heard his pro wrestling style promo, I mean, you heard a portion of him yesterday. He was going nuts. He was talking about wanting the 12 pounds of gold. He was talking about being the linear champion. What else did he say? Oh, he made some comment about turning something sideways and sticking it straight up the ass of the Brazilians or something like that. I mean, stolen directly from The Rock. I mean, he was on fire yesterday. And what a great troll, you know. I have to listen today. Dave and I were talking about Chael last night. And of course, there are a handful of people on the internet that are just so up in arms. How dare we talk about how Chael Sonnen, this money launderer, this liar, how dare we talk about how he had a great promo? Like, the fact that Chael has done these things means that he can never cut a good promo again. Or the fact that we haven't talked about these things a million times over the past 2 years ad nauseum. My God, I've talked more about Chael Sonnen and his testosterone issue and his legal problems than I've talked about weight cutting, which people are sick of. But anyway, the point is, yes, we know Chael has done all these things. Yes, I ranted and raved about the fact that he fought in Texas. But guess what? He did! So now I can talk about his promo, since that is, in fact, news. Cut a promo about Anderson Silva. And as noted at the beginning of the show, he challenged him to a loser leaves town match, which Dana White is apparently interested in booking. Whether that takes place over the Super Bowl weekend or not, I don't know. But that's when Chael wants it. And Anderson Silva, I'm sure, is going to be interested as well. And Chael, I mean, he destroyed Brian Stann, as I know, just destroyed him. And that would be a huge money rematch, that fight right there. I think that's a match that, I don't know if it would not break records. I don't think it's going to do 1.7 million buys. But I think that that is a million buy show. People are interested in that fight. Chael and Anderson are, it's funny because all of the people crying right now about how we are putting over Chael Sonnen's promo, those are the same people that would, in fact, buy that show hoping to see Anderson Silva kill Chael Sonnen. Because that's what this business is all about, getting emotion out of people. And that's what Chael has done. And will we see that fight? I don't know. Will it take place in Cowboy Stadium? Will it take place in Brazil? Obviously, a lot of questions, but it's going to be a big fight in 2012.
Will we see that fight? How can we not see that fight? It is amazing a little bit, though, the double standard that, you know, the people that were ranting and raving about how dare, you know, they do anything with Nate D when it comes to Diaz. But, you know, Sonnen, just because of that mouth, it is somewhat of a double standard when it comes to some of the reaction towards him. Although I'll say this, there has never been anyone more hated, I think, than Chael Sonnen, although he played he cannot help but play the heel role. Yeah, the promos he was cutting, the post-fight press conference, Anderson, if I was, you know, somebody was saying that about me, I would have jumped over the cage and, you know, rammed that microphone up his rear. All of that sort of stuff. I mean, he was phenomenal and looked like a zillion bucks. And this is going to sound offensive to Brian Stann. Brian Stann has been overrated for the level he's at. And that's not, he's been promoted great, but in a way, in a little bit, he's been a little bit overrated. And Sonnen is, I mean, he just looked fantastic last night. He looked incredible. And the way he did that, the way he finished with Joe Rogan, and I wish Mike Goldberg would not have said anything about this could be a very interesting interview. Wish he wouldn't have said that at all. If he would have just did that and actually took the mic away from Rogan and just dropped it, because, I mean, it was, he challenged him to a loser leaves town match. If Anderson Silva loses the fight, he leaves the division. If he loses the fight, he leaves the UFC. And I just, right, there's only one guy who can pull this off right now, and it's him. And I'll say this, it is amazing to watch. Everything that has happened with him, remember, he was just the guy in the WEC. He'd been around for a while, and everybody had seen him fight before. But he had those weird fights with Paulo Filho. His first fight in the UFC, he got caught in a triangle, I think it was. I can't remember who choked him out. But he got choked out his first fight coming in, after the UFC, or right into the UFC. And in a way, doing everything wrong, getting popped for testosterone, having the money laundering thing, lying about what a commissioner in one of the major states had said to you about using testosterone. All of these sorts of things, he, in a way, has done everything wrong, and it has worked out perfectly, and only one guy can do that, and that's him.
And again, I'll say this again. All of Chael's legal problems, which we have talked about ad nauseum, what does that have to do with the fact that he cut a good promo? I mean, one has nothing to do with the other.
People have this weird... They turn on their sporting thing when it's something they don't agree with. Well, he's not sporting, or that's not right, or this or that. Yeah, you know what? This isn't the nice guy business.
No.
One of my defenses, and whether it's right or wrong about Diaz, too. I mean, maybe I've watched too much boxing and wrestling and mixed martial arts over the years and K-1, where this isn't a good dude business, and you do make exceptions for, at times for guys, whether it be Rampage Jackson and what he went through, and he was never disciplined by the UFC, and if he was in another sport and hit a pregnant woman with his truck, probably would have been. But these things happen in this business. Floyd Mayweather Jr., who we talk about all the time, has gotten into a zillion battles with women, allegedly over the years. I mean, and we still cover him, and that's not the first thing that comes up. There are some guys who get passes. This isn't the nice guy business.
And this isn't even getting a pass. Again, what... Someone explain to me what all of Chael's legal problems have to do with the fact that he cut a good promo at UFC last night. Because I don't see what one has to do with the other. They're two completely different things. If you wanted me to waste an hour going over all this stuff again, I'd be happy to do so. But I don't know what one thing has to do with the fact that he cut a good promo last night. And in regards to that promo, by the way, there was more of the promo that he had planned that you didn't hear. Rogan pulled the mic away from him, and he was going to say, Anderson, I need the answer now. I want a yes or no, and if you say no, I'm going to hop out of this cage, and I'm going to go over there to the front row, and I'm going to kick your ass right here in Houston, Texas. That was his planned promo. He didn't get to finish it. And the fact of the matter is, the building went nuts for that promo. The fans that were watching at home here with me, I had a fairly packed house actually, went nuts for that promo. And the WWE people that were watching UFC last night, and there were many of them, they went nuts for that promo. That's all they were talking about. He did a better promo than we do here. Okay, this is news. Regardless of anything else going on in Chael Sonnen's life, this is news. And that promo is going to result in a lot of people buying that pay-per-view, which is, in fact, news. We're going to talk more news after the break. We've got a lot of stuff coming up in the second hour. We're going to wrap up the UFC talk. There's tons to discuss regarding Raw. Coming up after this, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Short segment here. So before we go, Mike, any final thoughts on last night's UFC 136?
Yeah, I know one guy who wouldn't want to be lobbying against Chael Sonnen's request, and that's Dan Henderson. I think, I know that the balloon was floated out there by the UFC about the possibility of Henderson getting the fight, but no one wants to see that, especially not after last night too. Leonard Garcia, Nam Phan, actually the rematch from the Ultimate Fighter finale last year, was the fight of the night again. And Nam Phan, I mean, except for the last round, Garcia won the last round, but Phan, I thought, clearly won the first two rounds. And, you know, it's amazing, kind of looking at Phan's record, for as many good fights as he's been in, it kind of surprised me that, you know, this is actually his first big fight win. He lost them both in Strikeforce, lost in K1, lost in Sengoku, so it was kind of surprising. This was actually his, you know, his first, you know, winning fight in the UFC, but it was a, you know, again, another fun war with Garcia, although I guess it was the fight of the night. It just, the Garcia swings so wild, and he's really fun to watch, but he is so wacky wild, and it's not because of lack of energy or anything like that. He drives himself into being tired during rounds, which was just kind of mind-boggling to watch, because in that third round, when he went back to, you know, slowing it down and actually knowing where his punches were aimed, he actually looked really damn good. So that was the other fight on the pay-per-view portion. Lozon and Guillard were on there too, and I remember seeing Guillard in New Orleans, and he was bouncing around and in a good mood outside the arena for the fight night show. And you know, Lozon said he looked like he was a little bit cocky going into this fight, and it didn't take much. I mean, Guillard came out confident, threw a couple of head kicks, but then got caught with a counter left hand. It didn't look that hard, and just Lozon jumped on him, pounded him down, and quickly got on the rear naked choke for the decision, or for a submission in 47 seconds. So, again, back to the drawing board for Melvin Guillard, who always looks like he's going to be kind of pushed over that edge and just doesn't seem to make it.
All right, we'll be back after our hourly break talking tons of pro wrestling here on Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. We have a lot of wrestling to talk about here in the next hour. Short segment here. I wanted to get Mike's thoughts very quickly on ROH on Sinclair. He's got a chance to watch the first two episodes. So, Mike, what do you think so far?
You know, I love it. I've signed up. You got to watch the, if you don't have a Sinclair affiliate, you got to go to ROHWrestling.com and sign up. And you can either pay the money and see it, I think, on Sundays for the Friday show.
But
if you sign up for free, you have to wait till the next Thursday. And, you know, it's not a bad deal. And a lot of people are shooting back at ROH for this. This isn't really their deal. This is Sinclair's deal to make sure that their affiliates are being protected. And they don't exactly have a great online setup or anything like that. So, you know, it's a work in progress right now. But it's not a bad deal at all. But it's a throwback of it's a wrestling show. And I'm not sure the age group that's listening to us right now, but for Brian and I mean, it's a simple wrestling show from back in the day with these segments and, you know, interviews trying to get things across and accomplished and good matches that, you know, aren't necessarily there to tear the house down. I was kind of surprised on the first show when they started with Future Shock against the Bravados, because as much as I'm on the Bravado bandwagon, I think it would have had more of a, I don't know, I would have put Mike Bennett or somebody else out there, I think, to really, you know, showcase and I know it wouldn't be the ROH style, but the direction that they're kind of trying to go in. But outside of that, I mean, it's a great wrestling show. It's like, you know, sitting back in the 80s and watching a syndicated show, you know, for an hour long. And I thought it was cool, and I was surprised, you know, Jay Lethal, you know, winning the TV title after a couple, you know, doing the couple more minutes thing. I thought they were going to make it like, you know, old school Jim Crockett days and actually cut it off. But it's the best wrestling show on out there, and it's no joke, especially after watching Raw this past week and TNA, obviously being TNA. I mean, ROH is the best hope for a wrestling show out there right now.
We're going to talk about Raw and TNA when we come back from the break. There's some stuff to talk about there, particularly Raw. Coming up in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here to talk all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next hour. And just a quick note, facebook.com/official Brian Alvarez is my Facebook page. That's facebook.com/official. Brian Alvarez, also facebook.com/WrestlingObserver is the Facebook for this website as well. So make sure you head up there and check both of them out. And Mike, I know you've got one as well. If you'd like to get that plug out there, now's your chance.
Sure, it's just facebook.com/ Michael Sempervivi, and my Twitter, Sempervivi, Sempervivi, the Twitterverse there. So, yes,
Michael.
Follow along, friend along.
Michael Sempervivi.
Yes, got to go
right.
Proper.
Twitter.com/ Brian Alvarez is also mine as well. So, anyway, Raw this past Monday night was a wacky show. What
it
they
was
did, oh my God, where to even start? What they did was all of the wrestlers came out and issued a vote of no confidence on Triple H, and they walked out. That led us to SmackDown, where the wrestlers were just back. Now, I don't even know where to begin here. I could rant and rave about this for a full hour, but let's get your thoughts here first, Mike, so I don't just run you over. What were your thoughts on Raw Monday night?
Once again, wrestlers are not actors. Even though we've talked about it ad nauseum on here ever since the CM Punk thing kind of broke and Vince left and Triple H took his spot, that they seem to be really, you know, spiraling way too fast, pushing things along with this, you know, Triple H is COO and, you know, instantly he's got massive problems and just all of that stuff. I mean, they have this union thing kind of going on here, or the thought of, you know, a pseudo-union thing and unfair working conditions and this, that, and the other. I mean, even by today's standards of making everything go, what would have taken 6 months takes a month. Even by those standards, this has been so – they just threw something together with no logic and trying to – Jim Ross and guys like that who are trying to, you know, defend and play along with the storyline and doing their best to try to explain their actions away, and Booker T not doing a very good job trying to explain actions away. It's just, it's thrown together nonsense that made everybody look like schmucks. I mean, Monday night, I was yelling at my TV for Ted DiBiase to go running out of the building when they opened up the way they did with, you know, Drew down, Morrison down, Jinder Mahal down. It was like, you know, why? There's other people that could be in these spots, you know, losing these matches. It doesn't make much sense. It took a half hour for them to even say that Alberto Del Rio. It was so important we had to change the belt to John Cena that it took a half hour before Alberto Del Rio, who was not even in the middle of the mix of this little combination in this group. It's just one thing after another where it just boggles your mind, and maybe and this all turns out so incredibly well and the story is great. I just don't see how it's going to help anybody either. It's all been rushed. It's all goofy. It's all wonky, and it doesn't make any sense. It's just, I don't know. It's just forced. It's a forced mess. And everybody looking like a schmuck on SmackDown and walking out on Raw. I mean, Lawler tried to explain it away, but it still doesn't make any sense that these guys are leaving. Why would the women be upset? You know, and I know Triple H said that, but it's like, why? Where's the logic there of letting any of these people walk out if you're the COO and are in charge of them? You've seen the carnage on the show. Why, if your guys, you brought the cops down and the entire locker room, you called them all down there to rip the door off at Hell in the Cell. Why, when Truth and Miz were walking out, why did you jump them? How much sense does that make? None of this makes any sense, and it's not benefiting anybody. Except for, I guess, Triple H, who, you know, everybody was still happy after the show to cheer for and all of that, but he's not an active member of the roster. They have not made any new stars. They you know, the fact that Cena, Orton, Punk, Kelly, and Eve, they did not have out there. And Big Show hadn't returned yet. They were not out there at the end walking out because they didn't want those guys to get booed. That's how many stars they have, and take Eve and Kelly out of the mix. They have three. That, I think, was the most telling thing about the whole thing. And the other thing is, too, we can beat this to death, and we've been watching this, and we analyze it. When you have the average fan come Tuesday morning, when they are not, they have no idea what's going on, and they're pointing out plot holes and saying this doesn't make any sense, that's a really bad sign.
You know, the whole storyline of everybody walking out, first thing that drove me nuts is why are they walking out? Why are things any worse than they've ever been on Raw? You know, things happen all the time. People get beat up all the time. People get put through the downsaber all the time. You know, things are always going bad. Things went horribly when Vince McMahon was in charge of Raw, or whoever was in charge of Raw. I mean, there have always been terrible things happening. Why are things any worse now than they've been in the past? And the answer is they're not. They just tell us that they are, and we're supposed to go along with it. Much like they do on Impact, when I hate those storylines where, you know, they try to tell us why something, why we should care. Tell us why we should care. Tell us why this person, as opposed to showing us as fans. So that was my first problem. Then it was like, okay, everybody is walking out on Triple H. So what's happening on SmackDown? Shouldn't everyone, you know, I mean, Triple H is the COO, right? He's the COO of WWE, not of Raw. So if people are walking out on him, then they shouldn't show up on SmackDown either. I mean, Triple H shows up on SmackDown. You know, he goes out there and he's the head of both shows. So why are people showing up on SmackDown? That's kind of dumb. And what about house shows? I mean, if you're going to do this angle, shouldn't people not show up at house shows? Shouldn't they be boycotting the live events? And they never thought about this stuff. I shouldn't say they didn't. You know, Vince McMahon loved this idea, and he wrote the show. And no one else went up and said, Vince, wait a second, this doesn't make any sense, because that's not what people do in WWE. So then later they had to come up with explanations. Okay, well, this is why the guys aren't boycotting the shows. They have agreed to wrestle on the shows as long as Triple H, who doesn't do house shows, doesn't show up at the house shows. So that's why the people are there. And then for SmackDown, they explain, oh, well, you know, Raw's loss is SmackDown's gain. Raw's loss? It's not supposed to be Raw's loss. Hunter is the COO. You know, they just walked out on Raw? Why did they walk out on SmackDown? Mark Henry just killed Great Khali on SmackDown a week ago. There's not problems on SmackDown? You know, Triple H hasn't come out there and cut promos on people, and he's not acted as a COO of both brands. I mean, this is WWE, not one brand or the other. And again, what does this have to do with anything? Why should we care as fans whether Triple H is the COO of WWE or not? I don't care. It's like when I watch Impact and they're talking about, oh, we need ratings. I don't care if you need ratings. Why do I, as a viewer, care whether a segment has ratings or not? I don't care. And I don't care who's in charge of WWE. I just want to see wrestling. I just want to see some action. I just want to see some build to whatever the next pay-per-view is, you know, and do I get any of that with this segment? No. And you mentioned, who does this benefit? The only person it benefits is Triple H. Actually, that's incorrect, because if you recall, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I think with Todd Martin on our website. If you recall, a couple of years ago, they did a storyline where Vince McMahon sold Raw to Donald Trump in what was obviously a storyline, at least I thought, and I thought everybody else would see it as obviously a storyline. But the next day, WWE stock went way down. Think about that. They did a storyline where Donald Trump bought Raw, and that affected the WWE stock. And so the very next week, they did a rush angle, and Donald Trump sold Raw back to Vince. And it was just a throwaway deal, just to get it over with, because they didn't want the stock to be affected. So what you are doing here in this storyline is you are alerting fans that the guy who is going to take over WWE after Vince McMahon steps down or dies, Triple H, the guy who's going to take over for Vince McMahon, you're doing a storyline alerting fans that this man is incompetent, that this man is not capable of running Raw, that the only man who is able to successfully run WWE is Vince McMahon. That's what this storyline says. And that's what you're putting out to fans. What happens, say, if Vince McMahon, let's just say, God forbid, Vince McMahon dies tomorrow. He's drag racing one of his riders and he gets in a crash and dies. Okay, what happens? You've just done a storyline where his successor is an incompetent. I mean, think about this. This storyline benefits literally nobody. Nobody right now, except Vince McMahon, who's not even on the show. We're going to talk about this more after the break. It's astonishing. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 40 minutes. talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're talking the Raw angle for Monday, how completely incompetent the entire thing is. And talked about everything last night or in the previous segment from last week. And this all builds till towards tomorrow, where I guess there's going to be some sort of the wrestlers are going to be picketing. They're going to be taking a stand outside Raw. And again, I ask, why in God's name would any fan care about the wrestlers picketing outside Raw, about the wrestlers outside Raw protesting Triple H running the brand? Why would we care? What great babyface has been screwed out of something in storyline? What great babyface has been wronged by Triple H? What big match is this leading to? I don't have the answers to any of these questions. I don't know why we should care. I don't know why they think fans should care. I don't know how this leads to vengeance in just a couple of weeks now. It's mind-boggling to me what's going on.
And not that it would make any better, but if they would explain why, I mean, at least it's like when Jim Cornette would lose guys out of Ohio Valley and they'd appear on WWE TV in this completely different form and guys who were feuding were with each other and all that sort of stuff. And they'd at least try to come up with ideas of why guys would be doing this, because Kofi Kingston and Evan Bourne look like idiots, you know, in this, where it's like, you know, didn't you win the tag titles under him? Have Mysterio come out and say, hey, you made me defend my title that I just won too quickly. Have Cody, who's in the middle of this, say, you know, you had Randy Orton almost kill me with a ring bell and I was bleeding all over the place. Something, at least try. And that's the thing. It's not benefiting. The whole thing stinks. And the other thing is, and we haven't talked about Hell in the Cell yet, with all of these pay-per-views, they're in the middle of this streak of way too many pay-per-views in short periods of time. Where was the like you said, they're building for tomorrow, the solidarity thing for Raw. How about building towards the show you want to separate $50 from people for? How about that? Because you didn't announce anything. And you have champions now. I mean, yeah, Mark Henry's super strong, but Del Rio, you know.
Del Rio is just another geek. He's just another geek.
Yeah. I mean, Dolph, and I mean, the fact that they've gone towards TNA with these themed pay-per-views and forcing themselves into corners with these pay-per-views and having a tag team like Dolph Ziggler and Jack Swagger, where it's that TNA mentality of we're feuding before we're partners, now we're partners, just that sort of garbage that has been taking place. I mean, it's just, it stinks. It just stinks.
You know what's funny is I have no idea what they're going to do tomorrow. I don't know if they know what they're going to do tomorrow. And actually, they may know what they're going to do tomorrow, but tomorrow morning, Vince may just tear the script apart and rewrite it, like he did last week, and come up with whatever he's going to come up with. But what's funny is they actually have a plan for the next four shows. They already have in their mind a winner of the Royal Rumble. It doesn't matter who it is because it'll change a million times, but it's nobody new. Let's just put it that way. But they've got all of these plans, and it's like they, I don't even know how to explain this. It's just they have 4 months worth of plans. Yet tomorrow's plan has nothing to do with anything, and last week's plan has nothing to do with anything. You know, it's amazing. Like, they know what they want their main events to be for the next four shows, but they don't even know what they're going to do tomorrow, which is, like, the strangest mix of short-term and long-term booking I've ever heard of.
Well, and it would be fine if they had, you know, something competent going on to do it. I could even handle having a sketch outline of where you want to go if there was the thought that you'd be able to fill in the blanks competently on short notice when it comes to the TV, and they haven't. When have they done that? They have not been doing that. And again, for everything WWE does well aesthetically and, you know, plans for the WWE Network and all of those sorts of things that they do well, the thing that got them there is the thing that just, it's mind-boggling. And again, I know I don't want to get into a bigger ranting issue about WWE, but it's like, look at their developmental. I mean, you know what Chael Sonnen can do that people in WWE can't do? Brian, for you, run the ropes. I bet you he can actually run the ropes better than Kelly.
Oh, I'm sure he can.
Things like developmental, things like
Zach Gowen
development, can't
the ropes
things
better.
Like, you know, trying to, you know, Alex Riley, and yes, he was not ready for it, but there was a way to keep Alex Riley in the mix instead of banishing him to NXT, you know, to try to build him up as a star. Dolph Ziggler should be a far bigger star than what he is. The tag team division, all of these things combined together with no long-term planning, not really sure where they want to go, no trust in anybody. It's just, it's tough to watch. It's amazing that they can make money in spite of themselves. Everything that got them there, and when you look at boxing and Mayweather, when you look at Chael and look at MMA in general, those things, and for a show that wants to be so cutting edge and pop culture and so dramatic, they don't know how to do any of those things. So the one thing they could always fall back on is the fact that you could have like a sporting type thing. Why is there any interest in TNA? It's for Bobby Roode to actually, in that sporting mentality, to go and, you know, try to knock off Kurt Angle. It's the simple things, and they're not doing those simple things. And just when you look at everything in general, great, you got a new guy in head of your movie division, fantastic. What about your, like, you know, building stars division? You know, you're not sending these, and that's another thing, you're not sending these guys off, and it showed it with Beth and all those, everybody on Monday night. These people aren't actors. If you're not going to have them wrestle, or you want them to be more, you know, sports entertainment, personality-driven guys, much like Chris Jericho and Mick Foley and Colt Cabana and guys like that, send them to improv classes, send them to acting classes, do that sort of stuff. So if you're not going to give me any wrestling whatsoever or very bad versions of it, at least these fools can actually act a little bit.
I liked how Monday was all about making your baby faces look stupid. Always a successful way to promote professional wrestling. Have a bunch of stupid baby faces.
Like, why were all these baby faces? Hometowns. Why would you not just come up sick in your hometown and just party with your peoples?
I'm just wondering why, you know, granted they kept a couple of the baby faces backstage, but why is the dreaded heel Wade Barrett the voice of the roster? He's a bad guy. You know, why are all these baby faces, you know, nodding their heads when Wade Barrett's talking about stuff? It's kind of wacky. You know, it's just, you know, Mark Henry is responsible for half the carnage, and he's out there and he's standing next to everybody else and they're all standing next to him. You know, why didn't Jerry Lawler go after Mark Henry during that segment? Nope, he was too busy talking about how it was a dangerous working environment because of Mark Henry, who's standing right there. The whole thing was just stupid. I just hate the angle.
They want to walk this line, too, of, like, you know, the cops are arresting Miz and Archer. If they're that united to walk out, to all walk out together, bad guy and good guy, arm in arm, to be out there, where was the pushback of, you know, any of them calling out Cena or Orton or Punk or anybody on Friday for not being out there? Where was Daniel Bryan, who's got a Money in the Bank briefcase? Why isn't he the one doing the talking and not a Wade Barrett? Why was Wade Barrett even out there, you know, realistically, too? I mean, all of those sorts of things, it's stupid. It's just flat stupid.
I am pretty sure, anything can change, but I'm pretty sure that Miz and Truth are supposed to be heels when this is said and done. Which is funny, because every time they show up, they get a huge babyface reaction, because they're being pushed as babyfaces, and meanwhile, the babyfaces are being pushed as fools. It's just amazing television. It's just, I've watched WWE for many, many years, and they're not as stupid as TNA, that's for sure. But TNA this week was a way better show. Way better show.
I'll have to take your word for it. They still have not dragged me back. I can wait on it. I love Bobby Roode. And,
Mike, you're missing out.
Hopefully James Storm. And this is, hopefully they don't do anything stupid where it's like Storm's got to kill Bobby Roode or vice versa or something like that. And they just, I'd like to see James Storm with another partner. But, yeah, they have not messed up Bobby Roode so far. And they've done it, again, in the simplest way. You see why he wants to beat Kurt Angle. You see why he wants to be the champion. You see the ascension. And that's one thing. I mean, they've screwed up a lot of guys and with stop-start pushes and pushing the wrong guys and bringing in the wrong guys and all that sort of stuff. But they've actually, you got to give them credit, they had never killed Bobby Roode, which is actually somewhat of a miracle throughout the entire process that he's been in TNA. But they make you want to see it because of the very simple, basic things. It's just, it's why the ROH TV, you know, that I kind of touted there, it makes sense. Stop insulting me. Not only as a wrestling, it's fine, WWE, you don't want to be wrestling, that's okay. Then don't insult me, you know, for 2 hours as far as entertainment goes. I mean, 2 hours shouldn't feel like four, and that's what it feels like.
Yeah, I enjoyed the Impact show this week. I thought that Hogan and Sting...
Oh, by the way, and from what I've seen, too, the rest of TNA in the last couple of weeks, and again, I haven't really seen it in the last two, but leading up to this, it's been like Bobby Roode, and then the rest of the show does kind of feel like 4 hours.
Well, there was some terrible stuff a week ago on the undercard. I thought this week's show was fine. Even the women's match was all right. And, you know, Hogan and Sting were given a bad... they were dealt a bad hand. They were dealt a stupid angle. I mean, I've said it a million times. The idea of, you know, 3 weeks before the biggest show of the year, you pretend like one of the guys in the main event is retiring, and everyone knows it's not a real retirement. I mean, it's just stupid. But given the storyline, I thought that Hogan and Sting, their performances were phenomenal, especially Hogan. Hogan was just, he was so great. I mean, you would have loved this, Mike, because it was exactly what pro wrestling is supposed to be. You've got a heel who comes out, and he panders to the people, and you know, he didn't cry, but he's talking about his career and how great the people are, you know, right here in this town. And of course, he mentions the town, and they all go crazy and this and that. And then, of course, it turns out that the babyface Sting has a secret video of Hogan and Eric Bischoff burying the town and talking about how stupid these slack-jawed yokels are for falling for this retirement stuff and how it's all a big ruse. And, of course, the fans are now they're really angry at the guy. And then Hogan loses his cool, and he turns beet red, and he cuts his promo. I hate you, Sting. I'm done with you. I can't wrestle anymore, but if you want to fight at the pay-per-view, I'll fight you. And if you win, you can have this company back. And he didn't mean to say that. And so as soon as he says it, his eyes grow wide and his hands go up to his face and he's like, oh, what did I just say? And then the babyface is like, it's all I needed to hear. See you guys next week. It was so awesome. They were so great. But I'll rave more about this after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. If you love this show, said it a million times, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. Daily radio shows. Daily! If you only get to hear this show one time per week, well, you're missing out. We do a show virtually every single day. In fact, most Thursdays of late, I've been doing four shows in one day. Four shows in a day! Not only to get all the brand new shows for your $10.99, but if you sign up for that monthly fee, $10.99, you get every show we've ever done. Every show dating back to June of 2005. Thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio all at your disposal. We cover pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, the history of wrestling, Japanese wrestling, wrestling from Mexico, Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare talks, hockey, whole nine yards. We interview some of the biggest stars in the history of pro wrestling and MMA. It's all up there, WrestlingObserver.com. Listen, if you don't trust me, and God knows why you wouldn't, go up to WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down the right-hand side of the page. There is a listing of our latest four free radio shows, absolutely free. This is exactly how it works if you sign up. You just click on the link, you click on the show, you either download it, you put it on your iPod, iPhone, iPad, whatever. You stream it on the website. It's easy. And that is a sampling of what you get as a subscriber. As noted, there's four shows there for free. If you sign up, thousands of hours of audio are available for you right now. So head up there, check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, we were talking about Impact and the Hogan Sting segment. How do you think Bound for Glory is going to do?
Well, what's the swerve going to be? Because Hogan is pretty much immobile for the match.
Well, there's not going to be a swerve. I think it's going to be a no DQ match that involves no falling down.
That's plenty of plunder and the whole nine yards there. You know, everybody, well... See, it's hard for me to believe that the 1 million people or 1.5 million people that watch that show every week don't know that Hulk Hogan has re-signed with the company. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, there's no retirement stipulation on the line.
That is true, but as far as, like, giving up the company, I mean, you know, does Dixie come back? Does Sting not win it back? I mean, I don't know. And it's hard to predict with them anyway, as far as what's going to happen. It wouldn't make any sense for Sting to lose. I would say Sting wins, but I don't know. Why would they do that? But I don't know who. With TNA, I have no idea who would actually come in, because there's obviously going to be some sort of wackiness to end that match because of the condition that both guys are in, especially Hulk Hogan. So I don't know what the catch is going to be. The only thing you can count on is there's going to be a catch. I'd say a swerve, but that may actually sound like it could be a good thing. And when it comes to TNA swerves, a lot of the times, it's usually not.
Mike, you're very jaded, my friend.
So, well, how can, look, I used to actually, in 2002, whatever it was, I actually did the reporting for I was one of two people who did the reporting for the TNA pay-per-views. I bought pretty much every single one of the TNA pay-per-views. I was watching them when they had the little Fox box come up and they were on Fox Sports Net. I have followed them. I have tried to give them chances over and over and over. And it's gotten to the point where, much like, you know, Superstars is, and I think a lot of people view SmackDown and Raw, for me, it's a missable show now. When somebody tells me that they've been on a roll for like a month, okay, I'll buy back into it. And I'll watch the show the same way I used to, all 2 hours right there on Thursday night. Until that time comes, why? There's other things on. There's other things I like on. You know, it's just, I can fast forward and find the pieces. I have a DVR. How can I not be jaded? What have they done to, you know, what have they done for anyone that makes them, why would you not? Look, Vince Russo, the whole thing has been Vince Russo being in charge of this thing the whole time. And it's amazed all of us that he's actually stayed in that position for that long.
They've been on a roll for a month, Mike.
Say what?
They've been on a roll for a month.
Okay, you said last week was the only time. Okay, from top to bottom, this past Thursday was a good show. You're telling me the last 3 weeks have been that awesome where it's must-see TV? I've got to tune back in because
no.
TNA, who has burned me for pretty much, what are we going on here now, 9 years with their stop starts and everything else? You're telling me after 9 years, this little bit, what they've had on the show has been enough?
It's not must-see TV, I'm not going to lie, but they do have a brand new, well, I shouldn't say they have a brand new booker. Vince Russo has been moved out of the head writer role, and Bruce Pritchard has been put in. And this is something, I don't know how long it's been. It's been that way. All I was told from someone in TNA was, quote, for a while. I don't know if that means months, weeks. But the show has been different. And in fact, we were talking about that before the word even came out that there'd been this switch. The show has been better. I'm not going to say it's great yet. Vince Russo is still there writing a lot of the show. Bruce Pritchard is just in charge of the long-term direction. Russo's still writing it, so you're still going to have some stupid stuff here and there. But the show has been better, and I think that you should watch some of it and see how it goes. I honestly think, I could be wrong, I think at Bound for Glory, you are going to see Bobby Roode win the championship from Kurt Angle and become the champion, and I think you're going to see Sting and Hogan brawl all over the building, albeit very slowly, and then at the end, I think you're going to see Sting hit Hogan with something and pin him in the middle of the ring and win the match, and Dixie Carter will return. I think that's what you're going to see at the show. And that would be, in both cases, probably the best thing to do at this point.
I'd actually be completely fine with that. But it's just, you know, if that's the case, it amazes me that, you know, they've not done a better job building to the fact that, even dropping hints that Dixie Carter had been gone and how she got the company stolen out from under her and the whole nine yards there. I mean, I don't know what Bruce Pritchard has.
Well, to be fair, they did do that on Thursday because they were playing it up as Hogan's retirement. And so throughout the show, they had a bunch of video packages of this is Hogan's most famous moments in TNA or whatever. And one of those was the whole angle where they got rid of Dixie and they made a big deal out of it. So they did at least bring it up this week. So they are trying to a degree.
I know in the mid-90s, Bruce Pritchard at least helped produce and write a lot of the stuff going on, you know, around the time Cornette was there, and there were some other people in there on the committee with Vince before Russo gained power and everything. And Pritchard comes from Mid-South where he did production and announcing and, you know, some other things as well. So I guess if there's any faith to anything, it's that he is, you know, Pritchard is pro wrestling. He is, you know, comes from an old pro wrestling background. So hopefully, and again, I don't know his track record as far as booking or, you know, what he's technically responsible for in a lot of ways. But you know what? With the way that they've been, okay, I'll take the chance. Finally, now he's not gone completely, Russo is. But if Pritchard is going to be somewhat of a filter, Okay, then I'll be willing to give it a shot again here too. But again, you're just going to have to let me know week by week. I'm hurt. I am like a jaded lover when it comes to TNA.
I'm hurt, Mike says, everybody.
I'm hurt.
I'm hurt.
I wrote nasty things about Jerry Jarrett. Jerry Jarrett, who should be in the Hall of Fame. Jerry Jarrett, who I've always incredibly respected when TNA was starting. I was like, you know, because he did try to fight the good fight of, you know, we're not going to do this and we're going to be more family orientated and this and that. And it's like, okay, you didn't do any of those things. Why? Well, it's because Vince Russo was in charge the whole time. So I'm mad at you, Vince Russo, for making me mad at Jerry Jarrett.
Well, that's TNA update, everybody. Bound for Glory is coming next Sunday, in fact. TNA is a big show of the year. I think the show's going to do 30,000 buys. I believe it or not, have that faith. Don't ask me why, but I do. So that's coming up. And we'll see what they end up doing. But I think that will be the finish of the big match there. And listen, I've heard from people, it's not like every review of Bruce Pritchard is glowing. You know, there are people that have worked with him that have not been high on this idea. But at the same time, listen, anybody, I mean, people have been saying for forever. You know, I used to always talk about this with Dave, you know. Can't they replace Vince Russo? Why is he still in charge? And his answer was, well, they don't have anybody else. And I always thought that was just a preposterous answer. Because it's like, what do you mean they don't have anybody else? Put Brian Kendrick. Give him a chance, for Christ's sake. Anybody.
They've had Eric Bischoff, Jim Cornette, Terry Taylor, Bruce Pritchard, Dutch Mantel. How many more guys can you possibly... Yeah, they've had options.
I was fine with them putting a janitor in there to try. You know, I don't care who it is. To tell me that there is nobody in the world that can do this except Vince Russo, it's like, anybody. You know, my mom! Have my mom do it! Give her a try! Something! Maybe she'd have one good idea. Maybe she'd remember the build to Hogan Warrior back in 1989 or whatever, and give that one a shot again. Something. But for God's sake, anybody. I mean, there's anybody at this point. And, you know, Bruce Pritchard, someone said, you're going from bad ideas to no ideas. That may very well be true, but guess what? I'd rather have no ideas than bad ideas at this point. So,
and I trust that Bruce Pritchard could put together an hour or 2 hours of a wrestling show, even if he had no ideas, that would be better than some of the nonsense that's taking place on TNA in the last couple of years anyway.
Sometimes I just want no ideas. Just give me something basic that isn't overcomplicated, that isn't a swerve, that nobody has to think about. All right, the great Bruno Sammartino just turned 76. He was honored in a ceremony at a show in Italy, and he's a fine man.
He is the most awesome of men, and I was going to say, you know, instead of watching the TNA pay-per-view, I was going to re-listen to that Jerry Jarrett interview that you did with Dave Meltzer last week with him on the site. Members can actually access that, but I think I may listen to every single Bruno Sammartino show over because it's incredible. And the fact that he went to go to Abruzzi, where he was born, to celebrate, what, his 76th birthday.
76.
You know, 76, and he moves around like he is 36 years old, for God's sakes. That he goes over there to help present the award named in his honor is just, it is such a remarkable, incredible story. And what he's actually done in the interviews on the site have been, they have been absolutely epic, from the stories of him as a child and surviving what he survived to all the politics and all the things he had to deal with. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. So, God, kudos to Bruno Sammartino, who was just removed from, what, heart surgery not that long ago, and he's moving around like it's, you know, he's bitching about the fact that he doesn't feel like, you know, a 40-year-old man anymore. He feels like he's 41.
Yeah, and speaking of miraculous healings, Ric Flair, who tore his tricep in the match with Sting, was told he needed surgery. His story now is that he went to the hospital, and he was about to get surgery, and the doctor took a look at his arm and said, "My God, it's healing itself! You may not need surgery! You're one in a million, Rick!" And so now he's claiming that he's the luckiest guy in the world. He does not need surgery. And presumably, I'm sure he wants to be back in action soon, but we shall see. But there you go. What a lucky fella.
I just want to hear Ric Flair actually telling this story. I have to hear him telling this story.
Probably be very similar to the version I just told right there. Perhaps even word for word.
But just with his inflection and his face while saying it, and you know what? There truly is only one Ric Flair.
Yes, there is. Angle's DWI, I believe, has been dropped to just charge of reckless driving. What happened was he was pulled over. He blew, I believe, like a .09, and the legal limit is a .08. But when you blow into the breathalyzer, when you're stopped, in many states, that particular one is not admissible. So then they got to take you to the police station. You blow again, and that one's admissible in court. So they took him to the station, and I think by the time he got to the station, it was like a .06 or a .07 or something like that, below the legal limit. So, in fact, he had that charge dropped. So now just a reckless driving charge, and he's very happy about that. And in TNA news, one more quick thing before the break. Jeff Hardy in jail will be out very soon. He chose to serve his time now when there were no TNA house shows. So back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. Back here for the final segment of the show, Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to talk pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for 2 minutes and 15 seconds. Very quickly, Mike, your thoughts on the upcoming John Jones-Lyoto Machida fight. Jones is the favorite here. Not a heavy favorite, but he's the favorite.
Do you know why people hate Chael Sonnen and every, they'll make excuses like you were talking about of like, you know, what does one thing have to do with another? Hey, Rashad Evans last night, his face gets shown on TV and the chorus of boos that he got, which, you know, he had to know. Of course he knows they're directed at him. He kind of takes it all in, but, you know, they show Forrest Griffin next to him who immediately as they show him, it's like everything turns a complete 180 and he gets cheered. People just don't like these guys, so they'll come up with every excuse to hate them, and we're getting more of it now when it comes to, you know, Rashad Evans' dislocated thumb, which is proof that Dana White probably knew something was wrong with him when he was swearing that, you know, Rashad and the cast, everything was going to be okay, and we're looking at Jones and Rashad coming up. It just makes Rashad the bigger heel. Obviously, I would rather see Rampage and, or I'm sorry, Rashad and Jones right now, but with that said, Machida beat Evans. If he defeats John Jones and you got a rematch with John Jones or you have Evans, I mean, I don't think, even though you're risking, you know, somebody getting hurt or somebody getting beat before you make Jones and Evans, with that said, I mean, it's not like having Machida in the mix makes anything worse for wear or anything like that because you have, you know, combinations there. But it just, I like the fight. It's going to be an interesting fight for John Jones because you've got a tall guy who's kind of awkward and, you know, likes using front kicks, and it's going to be a very interesting fight. It's also going to be interesting to see how Machida does on the ground because, you know, he does have a black belt in jiu-jitsu. It's not like he's a bum on the ground or anything like that, but he hasn't really had to show that in the UFC too much and hadn't had to show it against a guy as athletic as John Jones. So it's a really, really interesting fight, even though it's not probably technically the fight that people really want to see.
I can't wait for the battle of the front kicks. I hope we have an old-school Kane Undertaker double front kick knockout finish. That's what
you
I'm looking for.
You know what this means. Oh, yeah, K-1 style, that would be fantastic. Know what this means, though.
We're
really
out of time. We're out of time, Mike. I hate to cut you off, but we're out
of
here, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you again. Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.